Okay, here we are, just in time, learning Gemara Sukkah. but that's what we were up to. And Sukkah doesn't have mazel, as I've said it many times, you know.
What?
Doesn't have mazel, because, you know, Hanukkah, Purim, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Tisha B'Av, there's all this lead up to all these holidays or whatever they are. And you spend time learning it beforehand. The rabbi talks about it. You look it up. You listen to Shirim. And Sukkot gets 5 days. And the 5 days are packed with action. And you're getting over Yom Kippur. And then, you know, you're thrust into it. So apparently the same thing with the Gemara. You're going to get just kind of thrust into it after Sukkot is over. But either way, I hope this is interesting. We are on the Mishnah on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Okay, you have two pages in front of you. One page has two sides of Gemara, and the other one has one side of Gemara and then some extra Makorot for the end. And we'll try to do about one blot. The feedback that we got last time that I asked what we should do is do a little bit more of the Gemara. So try to do a little bit more of the Gemara. So start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hidla aleha et a gefen veta dalat veta kisum vesichech agaba psula. Hidla here means to basically to lay, right? So you lay on the sukkah from a grapevine or from a dalat, which is a gourd.
Pumpkin.
Right, or a gourd. I mean, that's what the pumpkin is, a gourd. Veta, veta, what?
Yeah, you missed sukkah, you got Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Veta kisum, which is ivy, which is another kind of, vine, right? So you put all these vines over the top of the sukkah, which is convenient. They're flexible. Pasul. Psula. Why are they psula?
I mean, they're still attached.
Right, because they're still attached. V'imaya siku charbe mehen, o shiktatzan, ksheira. But if there was a lot of schach besides for it, in other words, if there was already enough schach to kasha the sukkah, right, there was already more shade than sun, and you added on this extra schach, right? Extra schach, and it was just add on, then the sukkah is going to be kasher. Or if you detached, you cut the vine off of the ground, right? So you detach it from the ground, that would also make the sukkah be kasher.
Exactly. When you say mehen, you don't mean the mehen means the stuff that we just now said that is not. It's
no.
Pasul?
No. Harbe mehen, if you look at Rashi, umevatlan berov. In other words, you have other, it's mostly covered by kasher schach.
Yeah, I'm just the language. I mean,
right, it's more like hirba mehen, I think. Not harbe mehen, hirba mehen. Let's see, how do they vowelize it in the art scroll? No, sikuch. Oh, no. Im haya sikuch harbe mehen, meaning the schach, the other schach, was more than them. In other words, it was more than 50% regular
right,
schach,
right.
So, more right, than right, the right, than right, the right, attached
right,
schach,
right,
then
right,
it's okay.
Yeah.
So then that would kasher it. Okay. Zeklal, there's a general rule. Kol shu mekabel tumah v'ein gidula min hakarka, ein mesachchin bo. V'chol davar she'einu mekabel tumah v'gidula min haaretz, mesachchin bo. This is a rule that doesn't seem to be connected to the beginning of the Mishnah. These are new rule. This is a new general rule. General rule about schach, that the qualification of schach are two things. Number one, it has to be not mekabel tuma, right? If it's mekabel tuma, ein mesachkin bo. Or if it's ein gidulo min haaretz, ein mesachkin bo. Gidulo min haaretz, meaning it grew from the ground, doesn't have to be attached. It should not be attached to the ground. Now, that's the first part of the Mishnah. But the second part of the Mishnah says that it has to have at least grown from the ground. Okay? So those are the two qualifications for schach. Number one, it has to be that it grew from the ground. It has to be, you know, green. I don't mean green, but it has to have grown from the ground. And number two, it has to be not mekabel tuma. Could you have a case where it would be growing from the ground, but it is mekabel tuma? Could you have a case for the opposite?
Yeah.
Like?
If it grows from the ground, but you make it into something.
Right. So, for instance, your bookcases. Right? You cannot take your bookcase and put it on top of your sukkah. If you cut it into pieces and destroyed it, then you could. But as it stands right now, you can't. It's a kli.
No, wait a minute. If you put
If it's a kli, it's makabel tuma. Or if you have, you know, that sink, which is cool. that's a kli. It's makabel tuma, and therefore you can't use it. On the other hand, metal. right? Metal is not considered gidulo minakarka. So it's puzzle, eschach. Cement is puzzle, eschach. It's not gidulo min ha'aretz. Okay, so that's the Mishnah. The Gemara says, Yasev Rav Yosef kamed Rav Huna v'yasev v'kam ra'o shekatzatzan k'sheira v'amarav tzarech l'na'anea. Okay. So here is Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef is the Rebbe of whom? Rav and Abaye. Rav Yosef is, and what else do we know about Rav Yosef?
He's blind.
He's blind, yeah. There are two people that were blind that I know of in the Gemara, Amorayim. There's Rav Yosef and Rav Papa.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So every time I see their names, I think they're blind. Rav Yosef is part of his character. Very often in the Gemara, you can explain a Gemara by explaining that Rav Yosef is blind, because there are things that happen, and like, it's clear that something's going on with him, and it's because he's blind. Rav Papa, not so much. We just happen to know that he's Saginahor. For those of you who are my Shir on Shabbos,
right.
Saginahor means...
Well,
you can see well. It means you can see well, but what it actually means is that you're blind. It's a euphemism. It's a euphemism for a euphemism. So Yosef Rav Yosef Gamed Rav Huna Yosef Kamar Oshik Tzatzan Ksheira V'Yamarav Tzarech L'Na'anea. So Rav Yosef was sitting in front of Rav Huna, and Rav Yosef declared that when the Mishnah says that if you cut the vine from the ground, then it becomes kasher, Rav commented and said V'Tzarech L'Na'anea, meaning you have to
shake it.
You have to shake what?
It's cut.
Why?
It's like lifting it up and putting it down again, like you're replacing it.
Good. So if you look at this wrong Rashi, long Rashi, V'yasev, it's the first Rashi in the Gemara. V'yasev Rav Yosef v'kamar hachi had etnan, the Mishnah. It says, Oshik tzatzan k'sheira, amarav, Allah, Rav said about this, nihidein tzarech lachzor v'lesot trakula. You don't have to destroy the whole sukkah, or all the schach, in order to kasher the schach. Aval, tzarechu l'na'anea k'tzat otam. At the beginning, Rashi says, you have to shake it a little bit. Because they became schach, so to speak. They covered the sukkah while they were still connected to the ground, and that's a problem because the tithavi lehu hach keasiya the ilo psula mishum tase velo min hasui. Why? Because of this rule that the Gemara is going to explain of tase velo min hasui, which is based on the fact that you have to make the sukkah. And it can't come into being from something that was already made. So in this case, for instance, you put the schach on, but the schach was not really good schach. And then all you did was you cut the schach away from the ground. So did you put kosher schach onto the sukkah? No, it was already on there, and then you cut it and made it into kosher schach, but you didn't put on kosher schach.
Is that like a situation where you've got like a permanent sukkah that's just growing? You have an ivy which is growing over it, and you don't... take the
harvest,
you cut the harvest source, and then you just kind of shake it up, and then it becomes
part of
the
vegetable.
That's right.
I don't know what you mean by shake it up. How do
good,
you
so let's keep reading. So let's keep reading. D'ilo, psula, mishum ta'aseh lo min asoi. Here, just keep reading Rashi. Da'achim mashma sukos ta'aseh, kshata oseh ota, tehe ruya l'suka. When you do it, it should be already made good for suka. V'lo min asoi, bepasul she'en ra'u l'suka, v'ata metakno betikun muat. It shouldn't be a situation where you made the suka, it was pasul, and then you fix it a little with a little bit of a tikun. That shouldn't be the case. Ki hai demechasha labaktisa, v'lo hadar satala. Because in this case, where you tried to make it kosher just by cutting the vine away from the ground, and you didn't destroy it, That's the case. Umihu, Rashi says, Nianua karov l'stirahu. The shaking is meant to be a form of destruction, a form of destroying the sukkah. Shemagbia kol echad levado uminicho, v'chozer umagbia ad chaviro uminicho. Rashi makes it sound like, what do you have to do?
Really?
You have to pick up each vine one by one and put it back there. That's what Rashi sounds like. Now, I have to admit, at the beginning of Rashi, he just said, Nianua ktzat. Right? Lenanea ktzat otam shehuskocho. So it could be that he means that you just have to pick up a little bit each one. There's some debate about whether this really means you have to pick up each one or can you kind of pick them all up at once? Why wouldn't you be able to just pick it up all at once? Why not? But why did you have to pick up each one? Does it make sense that you have to pick up each one by one?
Well, I don't understand why we can't just cut the bottom. Is there a mitzvah anyway? Does it describe the process of sukkah?
You have to make the sukkah. So as the Gemara is going to describe, Rashi is giving a sneak preview over here. as the Gemara is going to describe, when you make it, it has to be a kasher sukkah. And I mean, the key to the sukkah is going to be the schach, right? So right. When you put, you have to put kasher schach onto the sukkah. You can't put non-kosher schach and then kasher it, so to speak. That's the Gemara. That's the whole limud of Tasav Lomin HaAsui, as we're going to see it.
Right.
Now, oh, that's terrible.
it's not seltzer, it's not.
At first it was good.
It's good.
At but first like it was good.
I like it.
And then like a second later, I realized it wasn't good. I think I'm going to go with the next. The fewest. Actually, the orange juice. Can I have the orange juice, please?
Orange juice and
thyme? Yeah, I'm good with orange juice.
No, no, this is purple juice.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you. This one.
Thank you. I had a coworker once that had a headache. So I asked him if he wanted medicine. He said, no, he'll take care of it. When he gets home, he'll have a vodka with orange juice. I said, what? And he goes, yeah, that's what my mom used to make me. I said, your mom used to make you a screwdriver when you had a headache? He's like, yeah, I guess so.
And then back up.
He was Indian. He was Sikh. Interesting. Sikh Indian. So one explanation I've seen for why Rashi is so adamant that you have to pick up each one at a time is that we tend to think of what's going on over here. It's really kasha. You just need to kind of fix it a little bit. So just, you know.
Flip it, yeah.
Rashi, and the indication here, Rashi says this pretty much, you can glean this from Rashi's words, is that you actually have to do more work here than simply putting on the schach. See, for instance, would Rashi argue that you can't just drop all the schach onto the sukkah at once? No, of course not. You can put all the sukkah on. There's no requirement of putting one.
As long as it's
and my dad used to do that, right? One bamboo stick at a time until we entered the 21st century. One bamboo stick at a time, right? He didn't even really do that. He kind of like dumped them all on and then played with them, right? Would Rashi say that you have to do each one at a time? So why does he require that you pick up each one at a time? Maybe because you're actually in a worse situation now because you have to undo what you did. And Rashi says that. How do I know Rashi says that? Where does Rashi say that? I know that, but why? Where do you see that Rashi says, but more than that, where does Rashi say that the requirement here is to do even more than simply putting it there? What do you actually have to do here? What's the purpose of the Nianua? What's the purpose of the Nianua? It's not just to place
tikkun,
it.
It's a tikkun.
But how are you being mitaken? What does he say? Because the Nianua is like, it's karov listira. In other words, here you're not simply putting the sukkah on, you have to take it off first. You have to destroy the sukkah before you put it back together. And perhaps that's why there's an added requirement of doing one by one. You have to do it more solid.
What about a situation where you would get... I mean, it's very common in South Africa, for example. Where you'll get your garden boy or whatever to build your sukkah for you.
A non-Jew.
Right, a non-Jew to build a sukkah for you. And you just come home and you lift one branch and put it down, and that was always kind of accepted that was fine.
Well, it's not so clear that he can't make the whole sukkah for you anyways.
Okay, but would he also have to? A non-Jew, would he also have to lift each branch up?
If the non-Jew can't make you a sukkah, I think you'd have to do nianua on all of the schach.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to pick them up one by one. That doesn't seem to be a requirement.
Okay.
But you would have to do more than just picking up one branch. Okay. So that's kind of a preliminary thing. So that's Rav. So Rav says you have to be Menanea. Well, or at least we think that's Rav. Take a look at what happens now. This is one of these cases where Rav Yosef is, frankly, he gets confused. What happens? Amalei Rav Huna. Rav Huna, he was sitting in front of Rav Huna. Amar Rav Huna Hashmuel Amra. So Rav Huna said, no, Shmuel said that. So what did Rav Yosef respond? Ahadrinu Rav Yosef Lape. Rav Yosef angrily turned away from Rav Huna. V'amar le, ato mikamina lecha, delo Amar Shmuel. Amar Rav, Amar Shmuel. What, did I say Shmuel didn't say that? Rav said it and Shmuel said it. Everybody says that. Amar le Rav Huna, whoa, no, that's not what I meant, Rabbi. Actually, hachi kamina lecha, the Shmuel Amra. Velo Rav. No, Shmuel was the one that said it, and not Rav. Rav did not say that. Rav does not believe that you need to do Nianua. And how do I know? Take a look at this proof. This is a very interesting proof. De Rav Achshurei Mechasher He actually says that it's kosher as it is. All you have to do is cut the vine. And that's it. You don't need to do any extra tikkun or hasara. How do I know? Ki had Rav Amram Chasida. Rama tchilasa da farzuma de inshe beise. Tla'an v'lo pasak rosh yichutin shalahen. Ata l'kami de Rav Chiyah Rav Ashi. Amalei hachi amarav mefaskan v'hen ksherim. Amal psikasan zo yasi asan. Who wants to take a stab at this? Let's go back to the beginning. He had the Rav Amram Chasida. Okay, so Rav Amram Chasida is a story about him. Ramat chilasa lefarzuma de enche beise. How many words do you know there?
Tchelet is the talis, no?
Tchelet is the tchelis of the tzitzis. Of the tzitzis, yeah. Right. Or the talis, yeah. So
that's his wife.
Yes. Rav Avram Chasid, well, not family. When the Gemara, not always, but when the Gemara says Beise, or Inche Beise in this case, it's his wife. He was putting Tcheles on his wife's talis.
I'm sorry?
He was putting Tcheles on his wife's talis.
Right.
And what happened? What happened? How do you put? How many strings do you put on tzitzis? How many strings do you have to have?
8 plus 1.
Well, you have 8, but it's really four, right? Yeah. It's really 4. So what did he do? He actually took one string, right, and he looped it. He kind of like folded it over and looped it into the talis, and then managed to actually tie all of the, or twist all of the strings and everything, while it was still 4. While it was still 1. And then only after he finished tying, he realized, oh no, it's all one string, and then he cut them. For each one. And then he cut them, and that's how he made it, In other words, the end product looked exactly like regular tzitzis. Nothing was wrong with it. But the problem was that when he... What?
Yeah, that's clever.
Difficult right. With 4 strings.
Right, actually, I was looking at the article diagram to try to figure out how did he do this. How did he do this? So they have a diagram. I'm still confused, but he did it. I don't know. Anyways, so what happened? So at the end, he snipped each of the tips, and then it looked exactly the same. So then, but then he was confused. He says, was that okay? Because when I tied the tzitzis, I hadn't done it correctly. It was only at the end, kind of like I did this shortcut, and then I cut it at the end.
Make the
well, he was making for his wife, so he doesn't make a bracha at all. So then he went to Rav, and he said to Rav, is this okay? And Rav says, yes, it's fine, because...
It's for your wife.
No. Because...
They were very liberal then.
Because psikatan zuya... Don't worry, we're going to get there. I'm not going to...
I'm pretty sure that's coming.
Psikatan zuya asiatan. Because... The finishing, you know, that cutting, that's considered asui. Now, why are we talking about this at all? Because but the same rule that applies to tzukkah, that it should be ta'aseh v'lo min ha'asui, applies to tzitzis as well. How do we know that it applies to tzitzis as well? We'll see how we know that it applies to sukkah at all, but how do we know that such a rule applies to tzitzis? Where in the Torah does it say you have to do tzitzis? Vasitam otam, right? Vasitam otam, or where is it? Also, gedilim taselecha, which is the pasuk for putting the fringes on, right? Gedilim taselecha. So the gedilim have to be made in the proper way. So here he didn't make them in the proper way, and yet he cutting them at the end. So Rav says that what you did, that was taaseh, that was asiyah. So that's why it's okay. So they transport and they say, well, if psikatan zuhi asiatan, then ksitatan gamken asiatan. The same way that Rav allows you to cut the tzitzit at the end, and that is okay from the perspective of tasal minasui, so too, by the sukkah, the same thing. The schach that you cut at the end, that's also the asiyah of the sukkah.
So
the schach. Yeah. Rav says, according to Rav Huna, Rav doesn't think you have to move around the schach at all. He disagrees with Shmuel. Shmuel considers it not asiyah. Say again. Yes, there is a pasuk for sukkah. No, when you make the sukkah, the Gemara is going to tell us in the next daf, Chag Sukkot Ta'aseh Lecha. Yeah, that's the limud that they make. Lomina Asui, that's going to be the limud. Okay, what's going on with his wife? So it's very simple. Take a look at Rashi. It's very simple. You don't have to go very far. Take a look at Rashi. Lefarzum Adin Shei Beisi. It's the first wide line of Rashi, the medium line. Lefarzum Adin Shei Beisi. Letalis Ishto. The Kasavar Laila Zman Tzitzisu. Risa Moso. Prat Lechsus Suma. Avoksus Laila Chayev. If you have a mitzvah, say she. Lo azman grama benashim chayavus. Very simple. There's a massive machlokes about tzitzis. About whether or not tzitzis is a time bound mitzvah. When the Torah says uri'isam osam, what does that mean? So one opinion says that you see it during the daytime, therefore it's a daytime mitzvah, right? And the other opinion says no, it just means that you have to be able to see. So it only excludes blind people. Blind people don't have the mitzvah of tzitzis, but sight seeing people have the mitzvah of tzitzis. It has nothing to do with daytime or nighttime. And this also, by the way, would mean that ksus laila would be chayev, right? That would mean that the clothing that you wear at night would also require tzitzis, right? So this opinion that says it's lav zman grama, women are obligated in tzitzis. We don't pass in that way. This is the long posters over here on the top left, in the middle left, which we're not going to do now because it's not our Indian. But he also talks about this. He shows how we know that we pass him that tzitzis is zman grama. But Rav Amram Chasida didn't. Rav Amram Chasida paskin that it's not zman grama, and so his wife actually wore tzitzis. Now nowadays, the women don't wear tzitzis, and it may have even risen to the level of beged ish, in which case a woman wouldn't be able to wear one. And Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he talks about that even if it wasn't beged ish, it's now such a sign of anti-halachic feminism that it's totally prohibited for a woman to put on a talis, or a kippah, for that matter, because it's a sign of rebelling against our authority.
These days, the
you can definitely find people that say that it is beged ish. Maybe if it was made in a certain way, then it wouldn't be, but... I think certainly our tzitzis, like the kind of tzitzis that we wear, is beged ish. It would have to change them, I think, since only men wear them.
A kippah is not
a mitzvah at all.
But is that at all in the Rambam? Or
to what?
I mean, to talk about this discussion.
About what?
About if women... if it's man grama or not man grama.
No, we're asking that it's not. That it is man grama.
Right.
Just by the time we got there,
there's no discussion there already in that area, in that time.
No. No, it was the sock. There was discussion about whether or not, once we say, there's a parallel discussion. Once we say that it's man grama, what is man grama? So, for instance, does it mean that we only have to put tzitzis on clothing that get worn during the day, but we have to put tzitzis on clothing that get worn during the day even at night? Or does it mean that we only have to put tzitzis on clothing during the day? So I'll tell you, they're not going to mean either way. Let's say pajamas. So you had pajamas that had four corners, right? So if you hold... this is taking us far afield. If you hold that the issue is the beged, in other words, is it a ksus yom or a ksus laila, then it's a ksus laila. You don't need tzitzis at all. You can wear them even during the day, and you wouldn't need tzitzis. You could wear your four-corner pajamas during the day. If you wore them all the time during the day, then they wouldn't be pajamas anymore. But if you happen to wake up in the morning and you wanted to put on your pajamas because you weren't feeling well, you wouldn't put tzitzis on them.
But you wouldn't put tzitzis on because of that, because you weren't feeling well, maybe.
No, you wouldn't put tzitzis on them because... it's a ksus laila. It's considered a beged that you wear at night. And what says a beged that you wear at night? You wouldn't put tzitzis on them even during the day. Or the alternative nafkamina would be, let's say, my regular tzitzis, I wear them during the day, I definitely have to put tzitzis on them. But what happens if I take them off and then I put them on again at night? Do I need to have tzitzis on them? So if you say that it's all about is it day or is it night,
you don't need to put
them on. Then you don't need to put them on.
So wait a minute. In other words, you're saying any four cornered garment you can put on at night, it might not need tzitzit. You can walk around.
So that's the debate. So that's the debate. So we generally paskin that it's all about the during the day thing. In other words, if it's not. So for instance, right? If you what we do is that during the day, if you're wearing a four cornered garment, during the day we put on tzitzit and we make a bracha, right? And at night, you don't have to put on tzitzis. You don't have to take them off, but you don't have to put them on. And if you do put them on, you can't make a bracha. Right? Okay. Okay, so then where does this leave us? So it seems like Rav is at the position that, not that he disagrees with Shmuel, that you need ta'aseh v'lo min ha'asui. You do. You do need ta'aseh v'lo min ha'asui, but he says that the cutting is the asiyah. Because that's what he says about tzitzit. He says the same thing about tzitzit. You do need asiyah, but cutting was good enough. Okay, now we get another one.
This is what?
This is Rav.
That was
Rav has said this, or this is what someone is saying Rav must mean because he said
there was a story about Rav by tzitzis, and Rav Huna says we can extrapolate from that story about Rav by tzitzis what he thinks by sukkah. So the Gemara continues and says, wait a second, you're saying that this is the difference between Rav and Shmuel? V'savar Shmuel lo amrinam psikatan zori asiyasan? Wait, does Shmuel actually disagree with this? Maybe this is not a good analogy, because if we can prove that Shmuel doesn't disagree with Rav by tzitzis, then maybe Rav doesn't disagree with Shmuel by sukkah. So Shmuel actually says something. V'hatani Shmuel, there's a b'risa where Shmuel, not b'risa, but Shmuel taught, Mishum Rabbi Chiya, Hitel l'shnei kronos bevas achas, v'yachar kach pasak rosh eichutin shalahen, k'shalahen k'sherin, my love shekosher v'yachar kach posek. Okay, here's another one of these weird cases. What you did is, there's a diagram in the art school. What you did is, you have a four-cornered garment, right? And two of the corners, you looped the strings through both of them at the same time. Why are we doing these things? I don't know. Maybe it's efficient. I don't know. You looped through both of them at the same time, and then you did the tying, and then you cut. Okay? Rav should say in this case, okay, great, that's fine. Possible. What?
How could that be possible? You've made a circle.
No, it's one string. You take one string, and you kind of like fold it over a few times, and then you pull it around, and then you cut, and then you start tying. So it's first the Gemara says, "My love, shekosher v'achar kach posek." We must be talking, because Shmuel said this is okay. Shmuel said this case was okay. So the Gemara says, "But aren't we talking there about a case where you tied everything and then you cut, which is the same as the Rav case?" And Shmuel said it's okay. So the Gemara says, no, that's not what we're talking about. He says, no, the sheposik v'achar kach oshet. No. All you did was you looped through both of them, and then you cut, and then you tied. Everybody agrees with that. So that Shmuel says that's okay, because the asiyah is the tying, and you didn't do anything yet, so you did the tying in a proper fashion. So it's no proof. So Rav and Shmuel disagree by the tzitzis. But now the Gemara says, but wait a second, if that's what happened, what was the shaila? He looped through, and then he cut it, and then he tied. What's the problem? Why would anybody think that that's a problem? So the Gemara says, "Well, don't you say Shema every day?" What would you think? Beinan kanaf b'shas psil. What do we say? What do we say when we read the Shema? Kanaf psil tcheles, not knafayim psil tcheles. You have to put the psil tcheles on a kanaf. So maybe if you loop through two at a time, that's already going to make the tzitzis pasul. So Shmuel comes along and says, "No, that's not an issue. It's not an issue because you didn't do anything yet." Being in knaf shas psil v'leika kamashmalan. Okay, fine. Okay, now we're back where we started. Rav and Shmuel have this machlokas about tasav lo min ha'asui, whether or not the cutting counts. So now we're going to start attacking Rav. Meisive. What kind of question is a meisive?
It's from the upper level.
From a higher source. So here, Rav is easy pickings. He's an Amora. So if you bring a Mishnah or a Brace or a Pasuk or whatever you want, you can beat Rav. So Meisive, Tla'an, V'lo Pasak Rosh Yichut in Jalan, Psulin. Huh. One of these tzitzis cases where exactly this case, you attach them while it was still one string. V'lo Pasak Rosh Yichut in, and you didn't cut yet. Psulim. Because if you attach them and you didn't yet cut them, pasul. Rav, doesn't that argue with you? My love, psulim la'olam. It must mean that they're pasul la'olam, meaning by doing that, you have completely ruined any chance of, unless you take the strings out, you have ruined any chance of it becoming kosher tzitzis. So now the key here is to know what was actually in the Braisa and what was interpretation by the Gemara. All that was in the Braisa was tla'an v'lo pasak bar shechutat shalhen psulim. The Braisa says, my love, psulim la'olam. Oh, we're talking about psulim la'olam. To you have to the Rav. That's going to blow Rav out of the water. So Rav comes back and says, no. Stop playing interpretation games. Amar lecha Rav, my psulim ad sheyivsiku. The Braisa just means, it's pasul right now. If you don't do anything else and you start tying right now, it'll be pasul.
If you try, if you don't do the shul, right, someone's going to throw you out.
Right, but the moment you cut them, then it'll be fine. That's what Rav interprets the Braisa. Whereas Shmuel says, Shmuel amar psulim la'olam. Shmuel says, no, the Braisa means Shmuel psulim la'olam. But that's okay. That's Shmuel. V'chein amar Levi psulim la'olam. V'chein amar Rav Masna amar Shmuel psulim la'olam. And there are others that also said psulim la'olam. But Rav's still okay. Rav can interpret the Braisa however he likes. It's open to interpretation. But there's Rav Masna who says, this happened to me. I did this. How many people are doing this? I did this. And I brought my tzitzit. It's like parallel to the story of Rav Amram Chassid who went to Rav. So here, Rav Masna comes to Shmuel, and Shmuel is not as nice as Rav. Shmuel says, they're puzzle. You're going to have to redo the whole thing. Okay, but Rav is still okay. Now we're going to attack him again. Ooh, it's going to be hard to wiggle out of this one, right? You put the strings on, and then you cut the roshi chutin shalhen, psulin. Well, there's still pasul after you cut them. What happened to Rav? Rav said that cutting is going to kasher them. So this is going to be a problem for Rav. V'od, but then they say, we're not even finished. What?
Because he hasn't tied them yet.
No, but it doesn't matter. Even if Rav says that even if you tied them, as long as you cut them afterwards, they're kosher.
But here, isn't this the case where you've cut them?
Doesn't matter when you cut them.
You haven't cut it.
Rav doesn't care when you cut them. He doesn't care when you cut them. You could cut them after or before you tied them.
Tla'an,
you put them on, you tie them and everything. V'charkach pasak. Psulin. That's a problem for Rav. Rav should say, that's exactly the case where Rav says it's kosher. Right? But then we jump back to Sukkah for a second. V'od. And by the way, I'm going to argue with Rav from Sukkah directly. Tanya, the Braisa says, Gabi Sukkah, Ta'asev lo min ha'asui. This is our Braisa. Ta'asev lo min ha'asui. Mikan amuhid l'aleh asagefen ve'ata delat ve'ata kisum v'sichech agabe gaban psula. Right, this is just like our Mishnah. It's a braisa, but it's just like our Mishnah. But it prefaces the whole thing with ta'asev lo min ha'asui, that the problem here is ta'asev lo min ha'asui, and it talks about the case where you put the gefen and the delat and the kisum and you put it on there. Psula. Hechidami ilim v'shalok tzatzan. What are we talking about here? If we're talking about a case where you didn't cut it, my area, mishum ta'asev lo min ha'asui, then it has nothing to do with tasev lo min ha'asui. Tepikle de mechubari ninu. Tepikle means, by the way, learn it out from. The root, pei kuf, or pei vav kuf, in Aramaic, is always out. Right. What's an afikoman?
The end of the...
Afikoman. This is what you do when you're going out. Right? La'afuke means to exclude, to remove. Right? Tepukle means to learn out from. So learn it out from Bukhubarin. Everybody understand the problem here? The Braisa says Ta'asev lo min ha'asui, and then it says, and what is that talking about? That's the case where you have the vines on there. Right? So, and that's the problem of Ta'asev lo min ha'asui. So the Gemara says, well, what is the problem? Because if the problem is that they're still attached to the ground, then that's not a problem of Ta'asev lo min ha'asui. That's a problem of Mechubar. It's still attached to the ground. Not. So it must be it's a case where you cut it. But then it says it's tasef lo min ha'asui. But Rav says that's fine. Rav says that's not tasef lo min ha'asui. Right? Everybody get the problem here? The problem is this. Our Mishnah left this all up in the air. Because our Mishnah said that if you cover the sukkah with stuff that's still attached to the ground, it's pasul.
Right.
Why is it pasul?
Because it can't be attached. It has to
good.
Be
from then the Mishnah says, if you cut it, then they come kasher.
Right.
Then we establish that Shmuel, not Rav, but Shmuel said, well, that's if you shake it around. Right. Now, did the Mishnah say that?
No.
Mishnah didn't say that, so neither Rav nor Shmuel can bring a proof from our Mishnah. The problem is the Braisa does say that. Why? Because the Braisa has the same case where you put the vines on the sukkah, and our Mishnah was clear that the problem there was the mechubar, but the Braisa says the problem is tasev lo min hasui, which is not mechubar because tasev lo min hasui means that it's already been detached, and yet it's still a problem. It says it's tasev lo min hasui, but Rav, how is he going to read this Braisa? Because Rav should say no, the moment that you cut them, they're kosher. It's not tasev lo min hasui. There's nothing waiting to happen here. So the Braisa is an argument against Rav. Everybody get it?
Maybe this.
It's a bigger problem than the rest that we just covered.
It's a direct problem from Sukkah.
I remember learning from Sukkah once that there was one instance where you can actually take from a tree or something and tie it into the schach.
Right. That's separate. That's somewhere else, yeah.
So fine. So maybe he's saying like...
That has to do with bittel, which is something else.
Okay, fine. So maybe he's saying that it has to be cut first and then put on instead of the opposite.
That's what Shmuel thinks. But Rav doesn't think that. So this is a big problem for Rav, and it's actually a problem from Sukkah, as opposed to being a problem from Tzitzis. So, it must be that they were cut, and yet it's still considered puzzle. That's not going to work for Rav. That means that we don't say k'tisasan zoi asiasan, which Rav needs. We don't say that cutting it is considered asiya. It's a problem. V'tiyuvta de Rav. Tiyuvta is a language of, okay, we've destroyed Rav. He's gone. Tiyuvta means he's finished. Meitive tiyuvta. Oh, Amar Charav, not so fast. Hachama eskinen de shafinu shlufi de lominkara asiya didhu. No, the case in the Bryce is a specific case of cutting, because here you didn't really cut. What you did was you kind of twisted it with your hands, which means that the vine is not attached to the ground anymore, but it's not really so visible that it's not attached to the ground anymore.
Is it like if you broken it a little bit?
Right, so there's opinion that says that that's what it means. Like Tosfos, the second opinion, I think, says that. But generally, if you look at Rashi says, Dishalfinu, where is it? Dishalfinu shlufi, it's the last wide line at the top. Pashchan min ha'ilan ad shenitkanu, mitoch shein k'titatan nikeret kol kach. It is detached from the ground, detached from the tree, whatever, but it's not so obvious. Sheshochvin roshe p'shchita na'etzel ha'ilan, lo avi asiyah ma'aliyah. Because it's still basically in the same place, it hasn't been moved, it's just been kind of severed, that's not considered good enough in terms of asiyah. What is the problem? Why? So Rashi makes it sound as though it's not a real asiyah, which means that is this a daraisa problem or a darabanan problem? In other words, is this sukkah kasher midaraisa?
Yes.
You think so? Rashi said that because it's still sitting there, lohavi asiyah ma'aliyah. It wasn't asiyah. Asiyah is a requirement minat Torah.
Right.
You have to do tasav lo min asui. If this is not an asiyah, then it's not. It sounds like it's a puzzle. It's a puzzle sukkah. No,
so it's not going to help you. But if you cut it, in the case of the brayta, he's cutting it at the end.
In the case of the brayta, he basically did it with his hands, I think, or he twisted them off in a way that it's kind of. It looks like it's still attached. They're still resting against the tree. This looks like it's still there. So it's not recognizable. So the way I'm seeing Rashi is that it sounds like it's Daraisa problem. The article actually says that they think that it sounds like it's Darabanan, but I don't know why. Meaning, if Rashi says it's not a good Asiya, it's not a good Asiya. But if you look at Tosfos, the second Tosfos, the Shalfino Shlufi, Ksat Kasha, the Hamafarish Taima Bebraisa, Mishum Tasev Lomin Asui, he says, what's the problem? He says, V'yesh Lomar Asmachta Ba'almahu. He sounds like he's saying that really the whole thing is anyways an Asmachta. It's not even a Daraisa problem anyways. Okay, either way. That's how Rav wiggles his way out of the Braisa. But remember, there were two objections to Rav. there was the brisa from Sukkah, but there was also the problem from the tzitzis. That in one of the cases, it was clear that even after cutting the chutim, it's still possible. So that, the Gemara says, kasha the rav, mikom akom tlan v'achar kach pasak, the case of the tzitzis, kasha the rav, kasha. It ends by saying, you're right, it is a good question on rav. So it leaves rav, basically, it sounds like rav is defeated. But does it really sound like rav is defeated? If it wanted to say that rav is defeated and he's done and finished, it would say tiyufta, right? So the Sfasamis points this out. Why does it say kasha? Kasha means that we've reached the point where we don't understand something, so we're just going to move on. Which is, you know, basically saying we don't have a conclusion. But we do have a conclusion. Rav is wrong. The Braisa disproves it. So you can't know the answer to this question yet, or at least not the answer that Sfasamis, we have to keep reading the Gemara. So the Gemara says, although at this point, the Gemara seems to be finished with Rav.
I mean, halacha kishmur.
Well, the halacha is like Shmuel, but that's, you know, let's put that on the side for a second. Just know how to read the Gemara.
Case,
it is.
Yeah.
So the Gemara says, after Kasha, Lema Kitanai. Right away, basically, the Gemara says, maybe the whole thing, anyways, is a machlokas tanai. Which would mean, the Sfasamis points out, that Rav, you could throw in as many braces at him as you want. He'll always just say,
I'm like that Tana.
It's a machlokas tanai. That braisa is like the other Tana, and I'm like the first Tana. So how could this be? What would be the machlokas tanai? So lema ketanai, avar velikton pasal, going from one place of sukkas to the other. What are we talking about here? Avar velikton pasal, the hadasim. Okay? The hadasim, sometimes, I mean, the way it is that they have berries on them. Right? They have berries on them, which they're not supposed to have when you put them in your lulav, right? When you tie them in the lulav. So you need to take them off beforehand. So what happens if it's already Yom Tov? You've already prepared your lulav. You've got everything attached. And then you realize that there's berries. You're not supposed to take them off at that point. The reason is... What?
You can't pick them.
Why not?
They're not for eating it.
You guys are going with Mukta?
No. It's licked off. You can't lick off.
Is it?
But for mitzvah, you can, right?
Is it?
Breaking. Surely you can't break a branch.
Breaking.
It's detached to
it. It's detached. Can you pick a orange butt off of a flower? Can you pick a... If you have a flowers on the table, can you take the...
No.
Technically, you can. I mean, it's Mukta, you're right. But it's not going to be kotzer. It's attached to the ground.
Is that kotzer?
No, it's not.
I'm saying, is that the definition of kotzer if you're taking a pre from something else?
That is the definition.
It's supposed to, no.
If you take an orange off
the
tree.
Pasul, it's pasul the hadas with the red berries.
Yes.
It's pasul. So you're trying now to make it...
That's it. So the problem with taking the berries off is that it's metakin mana. You're fixing the hadasin. It was pasul for a mitzvah. Now it's going to be kosher for a mitzvah. You can't do that on Shabbos. You can't change the state of an object from something that's not useful to something that is useful. It's metakin mana. So that's why. So you're not supposed to do it. But what happens if you go ahead and you do it anyways?
Possible.
Is it? Why?
Everything.
Right, but but why? Why? It should be fine. That's good. You fixed it. Why?
Because otherwise everyone would be doing it the whole time.
What's the sugi that we're learning? No, it's not that. It's Tasev Lamana Sui. So the Gemara says, Lema Ketanai, Avra Belikten Pasol, the Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yitzchak, Vachachamim Machshirin. Savru Adochul Yalma Lulav Tzarich Eged. First of all, let's lay down a rule that, as we all know, that the Lulav, the Hadassim, and the Arabas have to be together. They have to be tied in some way. They have to be fastened together. Bound. Everybody agrees with that. And then we make a further inference and we say that we learn all kinds of dinim from the sukkah to the lulav. Which means just like the sukkah has to have tasev lo min hasui, the lulav also has to have tasev lo min hasui. So it needs eged and it needs tasev lo min hasui, which means you have to make it. When you make it, it has to be kosher, which means when you put the lulav together, when I say lulav here, I mean the trifecta, right? The whole thing. When you put it together, each element has to already be mushlam. You have to already, your aravos have to be kosher, your hadasim have to be kosher, and your lulu have to be kosher, and then you put them together. But you can't put them together and then kasher them, says Rav Shimon ben Yotzer. So my love, b'hakamivli, demand the machshir savra amin and gabi soka kitzasan zoy yasi yasam, gabi lulu nami amin likitasan zoy yasi yasam. The one who says that it's kosher, he says that just like by sukkah, you can cut, all you have to do is cut the vine and it kashers the sukkah. So too, all you have to do is rip the berries off and then it kashers the hadasim, because that's a form of asiyah with regards to the lulav. What? Why are they not kosher with the berries?
Rashi says it's they have a lemonumar.
Right, that is, it's not nice, right? Or it's
below hadarhu. Yeah, it's not nice. It's not. There's without hadar. It's without hadar. It's supposed to. It is nice. It is nice. You say it's the opposite. You say that it is nice. Maybe it's about the smell. You know, I mean, hadas is for the smell, right? The berries maybe change the smell of the hadas.
Maybe it changes the whole concept, because the hadas is supposed to be like the inyan is the leaves. Leaves are supposed to look like eyes or something like that.
Says if you have too many berries, if you have too many, you can have some berries, but if you have too many berries, then it's not nice. That's what it says. They know better than me. Please, I've never seen a hadas with berries, so I don't. I don't know what it looks like with berries.
I've got a hadas in my garden.
Come outside.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Come outside now.
Kind of hadas would be thin. I think it's on the same.
Does it have three?
A little black.
Does it have three on the same?
Is it
edible? I know. What? You broke the branches so that they're straight or whatever.
They're different species.
What?
They're different species. There are different species of
what? There's not there. I mean, there are some branches that look like three, not every branch.
No, I'm saying.
I've seen growing.
You mean from one tree, you've seen some good and some bad?
No, I've seen some that have three growing together, but I've also seen that they're literally growing two weeks. They grow like in single branches like that.
Not mine, I see.
No, not the ones that we have for hedges and whatever else. Those are thick and whatever, but they all have little black berries.
Yeah, so they say you have to get rid of most of the berries. So anyways, so they say just like by sukkah, apparently there's an opinion that says that you cut it and that's it. Ktzitzatan zo yaseatan. So too by the hadasim, all you have to do is pluck them off, and that's considered asiyah of the lulav. So it's kosher. What does the other opinion say? The other opinion says the opposite. The other opinion says no. Taking things off, cutting whatever, that kind of indirect way of koshering it is not considered good. And they say that no, just like you have to place kasher schach on the sukkah, so too you have to bind kasher elements into your lulav. So Rav will just look at that and say, well, I paskin like the Rabbanan, and you paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadok. Fine. So then the Gemara says, no, maybe there's another way to explain that. That's one way to explain the Mishnah. The Braisa. That's one way of explaining the Machlokes Tanaim over here. But there's another way. Maybe I'm here by Lo Dechuli Alma. Lo Dechuli Alma Lo Amin and Gabe Soka Ktsisasen Zoy Yasiyasen. No. Everybody does. Nobody says Ktsisasen Zoy Yasiyasen. Nobody agrees with Rav. Nobody says that cutting it is good enough. So then how do we explain the Machlokes Tanaim? By Hadasim. V'acha B'melef Lulav Misoka. No, they argue about the other premise. What was the other premise? We had two premises. One was that you need taseh v'lo min ha'asui. Sorry, one. Sorry, one premise was right. This was the premise that you need taseh v'lo min ha'asui. So maybe they argue on that premise. One position. Man de mechasher savor lo yofin aluv misoka. Man de pasah savor yofin aluv misoka. Maybe one position says that you learn that you need taseh v'lo min ha'asui from the sukkah. And because you learned that, you can't simply cut off the berries. And the other position says, no, you don't have a requirement of taseh v'lo min ha'asui by lulav like you have by sukkah. And therefore, plucking off the berries is fine, not because it's considered an asiyah, but because you don't need an asiyah. Everybody following?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's another. And in that read of the Machlokes Tanaim, Rav has no support. But that's okay, because he has support from the first read. Rav can read however he wants. We're just trying to explain the Machlokes Tanaim a different way. so that, that he's he would be invalid. Vibay same, and then a final way, Israel on the lulav tzarich eged kuli almalo pligi diofin and lulav misuka. Ba'achabakam ibligis marsaver tzarich eged marsaver interach eged. That was the other premise. The other premise was that lulav tzarich eged, that you need to bind the elements, and if you need to bind the elements, you need to bind the kosher elements. Maybe we argue about that. Maybe one position says you don't need that. You can actually hold them separately. In theory, technically, you could hold the lulav in one hand and the hadassim and the aravos in the other hand with your etrog, and you don't need to put them together. One position says, and if that's the case, then just you know plucking off the berries is fine because you can do that at any point. There's no eged required. How do we know that there is such a position? We know exactly who we follow, because Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says that we need igud. How does the Rabbi Yehuda learn that we need to combine the elements of the lulav? He learns it from the halacha of agudas ezov, which is where? What's the agudas ezov? It's actually in two places. The first place is at, where do they use that? In Mitzrayim. It was part of the Korban Pesach. It was part of the Korban Pesach. It's this little hyssop branch, right? Yes. And the other place where it was is by the Parah Aduma, right? By the Parah Aduma, they also use the Agudas Ezov. So, Ulekachlem Agudas Ezov, it has to be an Aguda. It has to be bound. It says, Ulekachlem there, Uksiv Hacha Ulekachlem Lachem B'yom HaRishon. But the lulav, it says, it has to be taken. So it says, ulakachtem, ulakachtem. In both places, you need igud. Okay. Mal alan ba'aguda, afkanami ba'aguda. You have to both be bound. Rabbanan l'kicha m'l'kicha lo afina. Rabbanan disagree with the drasha. They say, we don't learn l'kicha l'kicha. Kaman az lahat etani lulav mitzvah l'agdo, v'im lo agdo kasher. So then, wait a second. There's another position, though, that says that, there is a position, there's a brisa that says that there's a mitzvah to be ma'agid the lulav, but if you don't do it, it's still kasher. That's kind of bane of vain. Who is that? Is that the Rabbanan or is that Rabbi Yehuda? Who would say that? You Rabbi Yehuda ki lo agdo na amai kasher. You Rabbanan amai mitzvah. My mitzvah. So they say lo olam Rabbanan he umishum shnei marzeh keli vanveh he's not the fun of mitzvahs. Rabbanan say you don't need to put the lulav with the hadassim and aravos in order to have a kasher lulav, but we have an external rule that you should try to make it nice as possible. It's not the fun of a mitzvah. You should make it nice. And it's nice to put them together. It looks nice when they're all together. I have to mention that over Chag, I was sitting next to a Temani fellow. You saw it. It was awesome. He had this lulav that was covered in hadassim.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
With two aravos in there. It had two aravos in there.
I love that.
We have three hadassim, but his was
where
like
is that? Where is that?
So I asked him. He says that's how they do it in Teman. That's a Temani minhag. It's a Temani minhag. Chabad don't do that. No. Chabad do regular lulav with hadassim and aravos, and then they wrap it with just lulav. They don't have the bletla. They don't have the. They don't have the thing. Maybe he was Temani. Maybe it was Temani. Okay, I don't know. He told me that it was Minhag Temani, and I've never seen Chabad do it.
I've seen it a lot. I just always wondered where it's from, what's the Makor. Is that really on Minhag? Because if it is, I love it.
So I loved it also. So the truth is that with a lulav and with an etrog, there's an Isser of Baal Tosif. You can't have two lulav and you can't have two etrog. Like, you can't take two lulav and stick
no, but this is not
but hadassim and aravos, you can have as much as you want. The minhag is to have two aravos and three hadassim, but you can have as many as you want. So that's why they can.
But you have to be able to fit it in your hand.
Yeah, but you
well, they already have the huge etrog.
Exactly.
Right. So
it's hard enough, isn't it?
Did you see that one guy that if it was in the newspaper or it was on a clip? The one guy who had the ulcer after.
You know, oh, I saw that.
Super the, size.
Yeah.
2.9 meter long.
How is that
possible?
Oh, that guy up here.
Hadassim like this.
Yeah.
Etrog this size. The guy's walking in.
But he doesn't like attention. He just wants to be conspicuous, of course.
How many people went to shul like that?
No, when I was in the yeshiva also, when the Rosh Yeshiva's father, actually, he used to get this huge lulav and a huge esrog. He wasn't Temani. They weren't Temani, but he was a big guy himself. And I guess he just wanted it. It was like a huge lulav, huge esrog.
I remember seeing this clip about this guy with the...
with the Ovot and the Hashanot.
Yeah.
He like had a whole thing. It was crazy.
I'm up next to Temanisho. We should see what's going on there. What went on there in the morning?
You guys
weren't
Temani though.
Right,
okay.
Trees upon everyone. We came with our little getting up to our book. They came with trees. They were walking. I came down. Trees. I'm not joking.
Well, the original the description is that they were 15 feet long.
There was something 15 feet.
They were so long. The ones that they used in the Beis Hamikdash, they were so long. They were really big. But it's very different. Okay, so what do we conclude over there? So the truth is that the Gemara did not come to a conclusion about Rav versus Shmuel. We pass on like Shmuel, as we're going to see. But the Gemara did not come to a conclusion. I would like to keep going the Gemara, but we're running out of time, and I want to do the sheet. But let's go a little bit more in the Gemara. Just see the beginning of this, because I got a kick out of it. For those of you who were there the first night of Sukkot, when I gave a talk, Joshua, whatever, about why we sit in Sukkot, and what are we commemorating? Right. So I said then that there's no nafka mina, right? So take a look at this. So the Gemara says, Zaklal, this is going off of Zaklal, Kodavish of Makabal Tumah, right? There's the other two rules that they gave. It has to be something that's not Makabal Tumah, and it has to be something that's Yula Meir Karka. So the Gemara says, Minani Mili, how do we know? How do we know these rules? I'm Rishla, because I'm a Kala. V'eid Yalda Min Ha'aretz. What's that pasuk talking about? That's gracious, right? Yeah. That's the water that's coming out of the ground. Ma'eid davar she'enu makabel tum. What's the aid? Aid's actually a cloud, right? This is a mist. It's a mist that's coming out of the ground. Ma'eid davar she'enu makabel tum avigidula min akarka. Avsuka davar she'enu makabel tum avigidula min akarka. What? Just like the mist in Gan Eden is not makabel tuma, but it comes from the ground.
But mist is made of water, right?
Right. Mist. It's a mist, yeah. So too, the sukkah has to be not makabel tuma and has to come from the... What? What is that? Yes, and water is H2O. So we should use H2O. And what does it have to do with the sukkah? So the Gemara says, if the schach is supposed to be commemorating Anani HaKavod, then it's a mist. A cloud is a mist. So we can learn from a mist to the schach. It has to be in some way similar to the mist.
But isn't that part of the whole thing of looking up for the schach that the whole Yinyan was supposed to see?
No, it's supposed to be like the Anani HaKavod. It's supposed to remind you of the Anani HaKavod, the schach itself. So, makes sense according to the Anani HaKavod. Meaning we can understand where the rules of Makabal Tuma and Yidulam in a Karka. Elamandam are sukkahs mamish asulahem, but if they made real sukkahs, then where the rule come from? Michael, I'm the Tani, keep a sukkahs of Shafti, Espinay Israel, Anani HaKavod, Hayyid Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Akiva, Omer sukkahs mamish asulahem. That's the machogas. Rabbi Akiva holds sukkahs mamish, and Belazar holds Anani HaKavod. Strangely, we paskin basically like Rabbi Lazar that's Anani HaKavod against Rabbi Akiva, which is rare.
So if we get a mist machine,
you mean what happened in fact then?
No, what the mitzvah is, what we're supposed to think of when Hashem says "Leman yedu d'orasechem ki basukas oshavti." Everybody agrees that they did sit in sukkahs, and everybody agrees that there was an Anani HaKavod. The question is what is the sukkot that is being referred to in the pasuk? It's not an argument about the Matthias. The question is, what does the Torah demand of us? Amar Yoch. So, Hanich Le Rabbi Lazar, Ala Rabbi Kiva, Ma'ik Le Meimar. What are you going to say for Rabbi Kiva about the rules? Ki Asar Vdimi, Amar Rabbi Yochan, Amar Kra, Chag Azukos Ta'aseh Lecha, Makish Sukkah Lechagiga. Oh, Sukkah is a Chag. So it's like Chagiga, right? Ma Chagiga, Davar Shein Mekabal Tomu V'Gidul Min Haaretz, Av Sukkah Davar Shein Mekabal Tomu V'Gidul Min Haaretz. What's a Chagiga?
It's a Korban.
It's an animal. So, okay, is an animal Mekabal Tomu?
Yeah.
No, it's not. Okay. Not Mekabel Tumah. At least not while it's alive. Right? But is it Gedul Min HaKarka?
No.
Does it grow from the ground? Mm-mm. So take a look at Rashi on the side. Rashi and Ki Chagiga says, Kol Behemel Rabbi Yochanan Gedulei Karka Hen Shman. According to Rabbi Yochanan, animals are considered in the category, at least for this purpose, of gidulei karka. Why? Because they live on the ground and they eat from the ground. So the moment they eat from the ground, they're considered gidulei karka. In other words, they grow from the ground. Sounds a little off, but there's an interesting nafkamina that Rashi mentions. What's not gidulei karka?
Birds.
Dagim.
Oh, dagim.
Fish. They're definitely gidulei karka. Dagim, umelach, ukmein, upitrios, lav gidulei karka ninu. The truth is that in each case you have to reevaluate whether or not a gidulei karka. Certainly, Rav Yochanan says, here they are. It's interesting, though, that in theory, that means that you could use basically animal skin for schach, but you can't use fish skin.
So that may be
It's very interesting.
I was about to say that would give you your answer for the Leviathan, but it doesn't. Because
the fish. About why you could use the
sukkah. About why you could use the
sukkah. Yeah. Yeah, good point. Unless it's one of those, is it a fish or a mammal questions.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would help. Unless, I don't know, maybe the Leviathan does, maybe it's amphibious, I don't know. Interesting. So they say, oh, maybe it comes from there. And then they say, wait a second, maybe then you'll require Baalei Chaim. Maybe the sukkah should be from animal skin. So they throw that out. They throw that out because that can't be that you require animal skin. So they say, this is a pasuk by sukkahs. It says you're supposed to take from the refuse of the threshing floor, which is basically vegetation, mm-hmm. Right? So that's pretty clear. Migarenacha or miyikvecha, but psoles goren v'yekev v'kasam edaver. You're supposed to take the leftover stuff from the ground. Ve'ema goren etzmo v'yekev etzmo. Oh, wait a second. Maybe then you can actually take the goren and the yekev. What's the problem with that? If you can you use let's say actual wheat or let's say grapes for schach? Can you like string grapes together and then use them for schach? No. Why? Because it's then actually food is makabel tuma. Food is makabel tuma. So you can't do that. So if it's migarnecha miyikvecha, maybe it's actually referring to actual food, in which case you could use food. No, because look at it. It mentions yekev, which is wine. You can't make schach from wine. So it must be referring to the leftover pieces afterwards, which is not food, which is not mekabel tuma. So then, maskifla Rav Yirmiya. So this is an interesting thing. Rav Yirmiya attacks. What kind of question is maskifla?
Svara.
From Svara, exactly. You know, he doesn't have a source. He's just going to point out something in nature. Maskifla Rav Yirmiya. Ve'em yayin karush, habami shanir. Apparently, there was this congealed wine that came from shanir, which was so congealed that you could actually drape it across your sukkah, in theory.
Yeah, you can get it as like fruit leather.
Right, pretty much, sounds like it. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know if that, I mean, is that from liquid, though?
Yeah, it's dried,
Dried liquid?
Yeah.
Okay,
no, either way. Things,
there's something. Shehu domeli gulei dvela. It's like these... So Amrav Zera, hamilsa havya biyadan v'asir Rav Yirmiya v'shada v'narga. So Rav Zera lamented, we had it. We got it, and then Rabbi Yirmiya shot it with an arrow. He shot through our svar with an arrow. He was like, darn! Darn that Rabbi Yirmiya. Rav Ashi Amar, he saves the day. He says, mi garnecha v'lo goren etzma. No, it says to take from the goren, which means you're not supposed to take the actual food. You're supposed to take what comes from it, which means not the food itself, but the refuse. Mi yikva v'lo yekav etzma. Then that's the answer. Amar Chista Amar Mehacha. He gave another answer. Tzu Hahar v'Havu Ali Zayet v'Ali Eitz Shemen v'Ali Hadas v'Ali Tmarim v'Ali Eitzavot Hainu hadas, hainu eitz avot. Amrav chista hadas shote le sukko ve'eitz avot ulav. It says, you should take from the anaf, right? You should take from the... from the branches, and what you take, you should actually take from the things they use for a lulav. There is an opinion that you actually have to use for the schach stuff that is kosher, stuff that you use in the lulav. You have to use hadassim and arabos and lulav. We don't pass it that way, but that is an opinion. Okay, let's look at the sheet for a second. Halacha l'maisa. All right, so before we get halacha l'maisa, hold on. So the Birchas Avram points out something interesting. He says, going back to the beginning of the Gemara, where it says "sarich l'na'anea," where you have to shake the schach, right? Uperish Rashi shows him shehusachu b'mechuber sarich l'na'anea achar k'sisas and d'dehavi k'asiya v'hani anu akar of the stira. It's like breaking it. Shemagbiya kolaycha levado manicho v'chozer magbiya chaver lemanicho. Okay. V'kachas b'shachonach v'tzarichion. He says, I don't understand. Hagam b'zman shemagbiya adayinu misachich ala suka v'lo nifsel ba'avir klal. What are you going to do? You're going to pick it up a little bit? But that's still kosher. It's still kosher. Let's say you pick them up one by one, right? It's still kosher schach. Imagine you have the bamboo sticks, right? Pick up one by one. What happens? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Exactly. It's still the same as it was. You didn't do anything. You didn't destroy the schach. The whole idea should be that you have to passel the sukkah and then kosher it again, right? But you're not passeling it, so to speak. Says v'lachore yishlam b'dishum shadam mekabel tuma v'shuv have a ma'amid b'davar mekabel tuma l'chein yifasa. He says maybe you'll say that because the person himself is pasel as schach and you're going to be ma'amid the schach and the rule is or maybe that if you use something pasel to be ma'amid the schach then that ruins the schach. I'm confused by this answer because I think it has the same problem because you're not doing it all at once. Mm-hmm. But he suggests that maybe that's an answer. Mm-hmm. He points out, we won't read the whole thing, he points out that most poskim don't even think that that's actually a real psul. We worry about it. L'chatchila, when we do our sukkah, right, we try to make sure that the schach is not resting on the metal.
Right.
We do tricks to make sure that the schach is not resting on the metal. Right. That's not going to pass on your sukkah. That's probably not going to pass on your sukkah. We try to get around it. We have a nice way to do it. It's good. It's good to get around it. But it's probably not going to possibly suck, even if it is. But he says that's not going to help us. So then in the second column, he says, so he suggests that no. You're not trying to pass the sukkah. What you're trying to do is redo the hanacha of the schach. The original placement of the schach was done in an improper fashion, and by picking it up and putting it down again, you have undone the original hanacha. You're not pasling the whole sukkah. What you're doing is re-putting down the schach. That's all you're doing, and therefore that's going to be a new asiyah. Okay, that's all I wanted to say about that. If you jump down to the Haggadah Hashri, he just points out an interesting machlokas. Quotes two different rishonim. Mikan hayir Rabbeinu Baruch mi Regensburg. Omer Shim asa sukkah betocha bayit tachas hatikra ve'achar kach hitzir hatikra de psula da'ator amatasa v'lamin asoi. Imagine that in this house, right? Imagine Andrew had a gap over there, right? And then you put the schach down, and then we ripped off the roof. Right. Want to make it simpler? You have a retractable roof. Okay. Fine. So, but what happens if you put the schach on? What happens if you put the schach on while the roof was still on top, and then you took the roof off? So Rav Baruch Mi Rebensburg, Rabbeinu Baruch says. No good. Because when you put the schach on, it wasn't good. It's tasev lo minasui. It's a problem.
But you're actually doing the maaseh to make it kosher.
But you're not doing the maaseh to the schach. Mm-hmm. You're doing the maaseh to the stuff on top of the schach.
But it affects the schach.
No.
It doesn't affect the schach. It's the same. It's equivalent to cutting the schach from the ground. It's equivalent to severing its connection to the ground.
Worse than that.
Why is it worse?
Because before it was cut, it was... It's the schach. At least I'm cutting both ends. I'm cutting what's connected to the ground, and I'm cutting the schach. There's a svara that says that action is actually to do with the schach. Here, there's no action to do with the schach.
Oh, you think because you actually touched the schach?
It doesn't. It's even nowhere near. It could be
fine. So Rabbeinu Baruch says tafas tasev lo minasui, no good. red flag, your red card, you're out of the game.
In other words, if you have this situation, you have
you'd have to redo this. You'd have to. You should take the roof off first, put the schach on. If you happen to put the schach on and then the roof, what do you have to do?
So that's
only
the first time you make it.
No,
because when you put the rain cover on
sure.
top and then you take the rain
cover. No, hold on. We're not there yet. Hold on. So that's one opinion. If you keep going in the Agav Sashri, Rav Yitzchak Halavan Hechshir. He says no, the whole thing was okay. The Ein Shayach Lomar Tasev Lomina. So Ella Hecha the Guf Hasuka Hayab Psul. By Guf Hasuka here he means the Schach. Kegon Gefen Adilat V'Kisum Mechubarim. Why? What was the problem with the Mishnah? The problem with the Mishnah was that the schach was puzzle. Here, that's not the problem. The schach's not puzzle. The problem is that there's stuff on top of the schach. There's schach puzzle on top of your schach kosher. That's the problem. Your schach is fine. It's that there's schach puzzle, i.e. the roof, on top of your schach. Remove the schach puzzle, and then you're fine. That's a review of success. So he says it's kosher. How do we pass? And so you look in the Shulchan Aruch, right below. Im katzatzai lanachshiro v'liyos hu atzmo miyasichuch kasher v'hu sheyana anau.